Does it mean that when you hate somebody, you're a murderer? Does it mean that? You know, the Apostle John tells us that the emotion of hate, as frequent as it is, as elusive as it is, as uncontrolled as it is, does he mean that we're easily condemned as murderers? I don't think so. Let's examine what John is trying to say here, to get at the bottom of it, and therefore get a lesson. If we examine 1 John 3:1 text from the Phillips translation, we'll see John's point more clearly. Now I'm quoting, "The man who hates his brother is at heart a murderer." Is at heart a murderer. Well, that kind of clears it up a little bit. Because we've had Jesus telling us that a man who looketh at a woman to lust has already committed adultery. Didn't Jesus say that? Anyone who just looketh at a woman to lust has already committed, but he hasn't touched a woman. Hasn't touched her. And she's committed adultery? Yeah, we gotta get that cleared up. But Phillips, I think, says, at heart, in your heart, you committed adultery. In your heart, you have murdered someone. You see, now we're beginning to get insight into this, what John is trying to say. Because if you remember, Jesus says our hearts is the basis from which we are judged. I don't think any spirit begotten forgets that their heart is the new creature. The new creature. Now some of you know a little bit about my thinking about the new creature. About it's right here in the forehead. Remember I told you about that? The God spot? Those of you who went through my seminar, remember the God spot. Right here, that's where your new creature is. It's in the brain, not the heart. The heart is a pump. You know, it pumps blood. It doesn't think. But the brain is what thinks. And your new creature is right there in the limbic system of the brain, right next to the emotional mind. I think we talked about that before. But what Jesus was saying, this heart of yours, and we use that interchangeably, the heart of a person and the brain of a person, it's the same thing. This heart of yours, you've got to be careful of it. Because he says, if you got it in your heart, you already committed adultery. If you got it in your heart, you already committed murder. And we're concerned about the new creature. And we're concerned about that God spot. And we're concerned about what goes on in our minds. Now, if we accept the murder statistics that's going on in the world today, the murder statistics are just piling up. There must be hundreds and hundreds of hate thousands and thousands of hate going on in the minds of people without it actually going out and physically removing a person's life. Now, this is a high standard. This is a standard that, wow. I mean, we have to say, wow. God wants us to be careful about what goes on in our hearts, in our new creature. Because after all, hate multiplies hate. Violence multiplies violence. The chain reaction of hate begetting more hate, and evil begetting more evil, and wars begetting more wars, plunges the world in this misery and degradation that they have. Hitler hated the Jews. His hate contaminated the German people who hated the Jews. The Nazis' hatred of the Jews brought about the death of 6 million people. There's a controversy on that. Some new information makes it about 4.5 million that was died in a concentration camp. The hatred of the Nazis people generated a counter-hate by other people, in which World War II, 17 million soldiers were killed and 34 million civilians were killed in World War II. The hatred of one man, Hitler, brought the destruction of 51 million people. Now I ask you, is hate very important? Sure is. And the Apostle John makes a serious point connecting hate and life. We know there's a connection between love and life. Love enhances life. We now know that there's a connection between hate and life. Hate diminishes life. Both the one who is the hatee as well as the one who is the hater. When you hate somebody, it's going to affect you as well as the one you are hating. And now we know that there is a connection between hate that diminishes life. And that's why John says, he who hates, read it for yourself, ponder it, meditate on it. He who hates remains in death. Well, that's like saying the whole world is dead in the eyes of God. And it is. There's only one group of people that is alive in the world today. And that's the people who are spirit begotten. That's the people who God has given His Spirit, His life, and they are on the road to life. Everyone else is dead in the eyes of God. Not in our eyes, but in the eyes of God. But we still want to make a better connection between the hater and the loss of spiritual life. We need to remind ourselves that we mean by spiritual life for those who are spirit begotten. The heart is only a pump. So, you know, the word heart didn't come in until Plato back in 430 BC. But, I'm sorry, the brain didn't come in. The word brain didn't come in until Plato used it. Prior to that time, it was always the heart. Because they always thought the heart was where the thought was going on, and not between the ears. But the heart is only a pump. And the latest thinking from science indicates that there's three parts to the mind. And I think I mentioned that to you. Three mindlets. The rational mindlet, the emotional mindlet, and the spiritual mindlet. These are three minds. Well, that's not hard for you to get. Remember James talked about the double-minded person? Remember that scripture? He's really saying, you got two minds. Well, science is now saying you got three. These three, rational, emotional, and spiritual. And we already inferred that if there is a strong part of one, strong part, the will, each one of those minds have the will, and if one of those wills are strong enough, it subsumes the other three and controls the whole mind. To give you more scriptures that tend to enhance this new creature concept, James 1:18. How does the new creature get into your brain? It's not a physical thing that we're talking about. The spiritual thing is the brain. The brain is involved. The brain is involved. In James 1:18, He chose to give us a new birth, new life, through the word of truth. That's how we are begotten. We are begotten by the word of truth. This is a kind of a first fruits of all He created. The truth becomes the seed of a spiritual life. Then in Revelation 3:5, I will never erase His name from the book of life and before my Father and His angels. The new life, when you are spirit begotten, and I'm so happy about that, when you are spirit begotten, because I know I'm spirit begotten, I hope you know it. We got evidences of it. You should look at the evidences. Am I spirit begotten? You should get that answer. And when you get that answer, you should quickly say, that means I'm in the book of life. The only ones in the book of life are those who are spirit begotten. Of course, there's another book of life in which no one is lost, so that the resurrection can be for all people. And in fact, there are four components to those people in the book of life. A name. A name. Now, it's important that I say this now. A name with a reputation. Second is a character. Because the new creature is developing a new character. You got a new person in you. This thing here is a new person. Not the old person. This is a new person right here. So therefore, you got a name with a reputation, you got a new creature, you got a package of experiences, and you have a system of beliefs which nourishes the new life. So any one attack on those four things is bound to injure the new life. There's where a spirit burner occurs. Destroy a person's reputation, and you are attempting to destroy that identification of the person in the book of life. What right have you got to remove the spiritual life of a person where God recorded it when they gave their life? You have no right to remove that. Any removal of his character, any removal of experiences. You got to remember, every one of us have experiences. But where do we get these experiences? You like to think of them as accidental. I don't. I think the Lord allows our experiences to come out to help us develop that position in the body. Remember, he says he puts people in the body where it pleases him. So those four things are the four components that one has being recorded in the book of life. Identification with a reputation, character, a package of experiences, and a system of beliefs which led him to that point. Destruction of any one of those four destroys the spiritual life of a person, and it's an attempt to remove them from the book of life. That's why we call it spiritual murder. Let me take some time. We have, brother, another 15 minutes? A half an hour? What?
15 minutes,
okay. You know, why does hate emerge? Of course, you could say, because we're imperfect people. You'd be substantially correct. Well, let's get into it more specifically. Differences amongst us. Differences, you know, why can't you be like Paul Mallory? How wonderful he is! How come you're different? You know, my wife and I, every once in a while, we have a little bit of, you know, she wants me to do it this way. I says, if I have to do it your way, you got to take your brain and put it in my brain. We're different. We have different preferences. We have different likes and different. But there are differences. And brethren, thank God for differences. Thank God for differences. The concept of variance in the universe is one of the most powerful and the most wonderful of God's design attributes. There's no two snowflakes alike, even though we got 10 inches of it in New London. If you take it microscopically, we all have differences there. Flowers. You want to get into an argument of the most beautiful flower in the garden? Want to argue that point? You'll lose. Because all the flowers are beautiful. What's more beautiful than the flowers is the fact that all the flowers are different. Variants. And all the trees are different. All the snowflakes, all the pebbles, all
You can go on and on. And people are different. What a wonderful thing that God has given us in the variance of design of people.
We find that whenever there's a problem amongst us in terms of differences, is preferences. Most of the problems we have is, I prefer this, you prefer that. And usually, I want my way. My preference is better than yours, Arthur. And we argue. It's interesting the way the Lord would see our business meetings. Well, I think this is great, but if you look at it, it's not breaking any law, it's just a matter of preference. So, preferences, differences and preferences are causes of hate. Now, this is the point I'm trying to reach for here. And jealousy is another source of hate. Lying is another source of hate. You know, there are people who lie as part of their lifestyle, like a habit. I remember, because I do travel abroad often, I remember one person was so happy to say, I could speak in five languages. But if you look at it very closely, all he could say is good morning in five languages. That's all he could do is say good morning. But I could speak in five languages. We call that the lie of exaggeration. Then there's the person who fakes sickness with an excuse to avoid going somewhere. Oh, I don't really want to go there. I don't feel so good. You know, sorry, I can't make it. How about a person who takes a good reason for the real reason? Declining an opportunity for service. So we got the compensatory lie. And the person who says to his wife, tell him I'm out. You wives, do you get that from your husband? Tell him I'm out. He's lying, isn't he? If he's in, he's in. We call that a substitution lie. How about a person who falsifies information on government forms? Oh, here's a form here where you can get more money. Really? Oh, I really want to tell them who I am, how I qualify. And so we lie. We call that an exploitive lie. Now, how about a person who makes a revengeful lie by making a false statement to get even or to revenge? Every one of these things, six types of lying, and people do these things without even knowing them. The first is exaggeration lies. The second is the lies of omission. The third is the compensatory lies. The fourth is the substitution lies. The fifth is the exploitive lies. And the sixth is the revengeful lies. You know, I like to think that the definition of holiness, you know, the Lord wants us to be holy. Well, what does that mean? Put a white collar on? David, how come you haven't got your whole white collar on? You know, and a black suit? You go around? Give your hands in the form of prayer? How come, David, you don't do that? Don't you know that's a symbol of holiness? You know, I don't know how you struggle about holiness, but you know that the holiness concept is a series of stages in the tabernacle, if you remember. You're coming from the camp. That's the most unholy. Most unholy. And you move up to the gate. You're still unholy, not most, but you're getting close to the gate. When you cross the gate, you're in a pre-holy condition. Pre-holy. And then when you get up to the first veil, and you consecrate, and you move it, you're in the holy. And then when you go into the second veil, through the second veil, you are in the most holy. So you go from most unholy to most holy. It's a process then. What we're saying is holiness is a series of stages that moves you from one point to another. But then you say, what do I do to be holy? Do I put the special clothes on? Do I look like this? Look sad? No. Here's one concept right here that defines, not completely, but in many ways. You're holy when you don't lie. When you lie, you're unholy. That's why we call ourselves the truth people. You know, I was saying this to a sister in Nigeria once. And she says, Brother Paul, I want to ask you a question. She says, if the police comes to my house looking for my son because they want to arrest him, and I know he's under the bed, and the police say, where's your son? We want to arrest him. Now, if I tell him where he is, I aided his arrest, but I told the truth, didn't I? Right? Now, if I tell him, no, I don't know him, then she says, I will be speaking of a lie. What should I do? Should I turn him in because I told the truth? Or should I lie and tell him he's not there? Being a lie and save my son. So she asked me that question. I says, I'll answer it for you. Whoever said we have to answer all questions? Whoever put that into our noggins? Remember when Jesus was asked a question by Pilate? He says, what is truth? Did Jesus answer him? He did not. And you know, in your mind, you could think about this. Pilate says, well, you know, don't you know who I am? I'm the Roman governor. I could take your life away. I'm asking you, what is the truth? And what did Jesus say? Nothing. He was silent. And I said to the sister, if the police comes over and asks you, where's your son? Be silent. Don't say anything. And if you don't say anything, you don't lie. If you don't tell him where he is, and you're saving your son. Why can't we live more like people who don't have to give answers for every question that comes your way? Be silent. There are your checklist of lies. Exaggeration lies, omission lies, compensatory lies, substitution lies, exploitive lies, and lies for revenge. Let's take another area as a source of hate. We're still talking about that. Gossiping. Now, this doesn't relate to you at all. Right? Yeah, gossiping is not something. Gossip always involves people. It doesn't involve the weather. We don't gossip about the weather. We don't gossip about the economy. We don't gossip about people. When we gossip about people. Gossip is not all bad, as it shows interest and care for people, but it can be a harmless activity, but it could be condemnatory. Why do people gossip? Can I make some suggestions? They have nothing else to do. Now, you know, the brain thinks up thoughts about 5,000 thoughts a day. This is established fact. About some people more, like Michael Nicholson. Costello, he thinks about at least 10,000 thoughts a day. But on the average, 5,000 thoughts a day. The pump automatically pumps blood. Do you tell the heart, pump your blood? Do you say that to your heart? It pumps it automatically. Right? The brain automatically thinks. You don't have to say, brain, come up with a thought. Oh, you can if you're in creativity. But the brain must think. The heart must pump.
The brain must think. It's an organ designed to think. And when you're not doing anything, it will look for things to think about. That's what I meant when I said people gossip because they got nothing else to think about. Another thing is people's lives are mostly boring, and there's an excitement of knowing about somebody else, you know. Like Paul Malley was seen on the side of the road right behind a state police car. And you're driving by. You say, look, that's Paul Malley over there. He's right behind. They must have caught him. He has a heavy foot. You know, we start supplying all the information in there, right? And basically, Paul Malley, all he did was stop behind the police car to ask for directions to get to Meridian. Okay. Well, the chairman is up here, which means I had my say. Let me conclude. The spiritual life of a consecrated one is the most precious thing in the eyes of God. If you've been begotten of life from God, you're somebody something special. God has truly given you life as He sees it. And I said earlier that everybody else is dead in this world. Now, since this life is sacred to God, it must be sacred to us. The spiritual life that you have, I know I see your life as something very important. And I want to do as much as I can. God has started your life. I want to do as much as I can to enhance it, to get it to grow, to get it to move to a more satisfactory condition before God. If you do anything, and I emphasize anything, wrong or right, just or unjust, which will cause someone to leave the truth, because we said one of the four components was the belief that you have. If you cause someone to leave the truth, we work against God. We subtract what God is doing. We really don't know His plan. We really don't know God. We will be held accountable. On the other hand, anything we do to nourish a new life that God has started, to water it, to enhance it, to help it, to sustain, we are working with God. We are adding to what God does. We are part of God's plan, and God will surely bless us one day. Amen. Thank you.